Welcome back to another episode of The Lars Resort. Still a podcast with me, Lars Sivertsen. Still brought to you by Betson. And tonight, your host, the host at the resort, the innkeeper of the resort, myself. I've been guilty of making some questionable life decisions because I agreed to do not one but two podcasts unrelated to The Lars Resort before actually recording the results. I've already done The Guardian Football Weekly. I have done the Norwegian public broadcaster's Heia Football podcast. So, by the time we get to do the resort, which of course is the main meal for me, I've already talked about all these games not once but twice, and it's very late. But hey, it feels good to retire after that, after two sort of, shall we say, slightly more high-profile podcasts than this one, to just kind of kick back and chill and hang out with you guys a bit at the end of what was a lively day of Euro action. This is great. I have had some coffee, so you can push through this. This will be fine. And I actually want to start with a corrections and clarifications column yet again. More as a general thing. Last episode? Bit crap, I thought, to be honest, when I was editing it, I kept thinking, you know what, I think this is my least favorite episode of the tournament so far that I've done. And you know what, I think it's England are to blame. England are radioactive, is what I've arrived at. They're bad and boring in a way that kind of infects you and damages you if you spend too much time around them. You know, if you spend too much time watching or thinking about this England team, you just turn into those guys at the hospital in the last few episodes of Chernobyl. That's what your brain turns into if you watch the Gareth Southgate's England this summer too much and you spend too much energy trying to figure out why they're like this. And just watching them, I felt my life force drain away. And doing the pod afterwards, my brain was sort of half melted to the point where I actually didn't say anything about Serbia-Denmark. Not a barn burner either, by all accounts. But it's the first game in the tournament we haven't talked about at all. And I didn't talk about the fact that Denmark got second in the group on disciplinary points, which is kind of amazing. That kind of flew by me because my brain was full of, like, stinky England takes. It seemed like they had the same number of cards as Slovenia, because their players had picked up the same number of cards as Slovenia. But it turns out the Slovenia assistant manager, Milivoje Novaković, picked up a yellow card against Denmark, which meant that Slovenia finished third. Amazing work by the assistant manager. Having said that, given the nature of the opponents, I guess it doesn't make a huge degree of difference. I mean, they could have finished second and gotten Germany. Instead, they finished third and get Portugal. Yeah. And to be honest, I think you might narrowly prefer Portugal out of those. So maybe, actually, Mr. Novaković was playing the long game here. I did not have a proper chat yesterday about the fact that Ronald Koeman's team selection was pretty wild. Did he play Dumfries or Frimpong at right back? He played none of them. He played Gert Rieder, which makes no sense. So there were quite a few things that normally we'd talk about that just had melted and dripped out of my brain because I was still kind of churning over England's latest pile of rubbish. And it left me feeling like I needed a cleansing today before the football even started. I had to go and hit some golf balls. You know, never underestimate the therapeutic properties of just smashing a fairway wood down the range for 2 hours. Like the 3 and a 5 wood, not the driver. I can't hit the driver properly. I can't be trusted with the driver yet. Putting that off for later. But I am, the 3 and the 5 are behaving pretty well, and that kind of smacking a few balls made me feel better. Anyway, that helped. And by the time today's games were starting, I felt cleansed, and I felt ready to go. And really, it was to become a vintage Euro night. Didn't start in a vintage way, I didn't think, with Ukraine, Belgium, and Slovakia, Romania, the dreaded Group E. And I guess the game started well from Ukraine's point of view. I mean, Belgium were, in the first couple of minutes, Belgium were kind of on top and they were moving the ball and I was thinking, oh, this could be a long game for the Ukrainians. But Ukraine held on. Ukraine had changed formation. They'd gone to three at the back. Mykhailo Mudryk injured. No Zinchenko in the lineup. Some pretty, I guess, a little bit surprising changes there, but it looked a little bit more solid, I think. Having an extra player at the back, maybe not a bad idea. And they've played pretty conservatively in the first half, but they didn't get bowled over. And they really did a good job stopping Belgium from creating chances. Belgium's creating very, very little in the first half. It was not a thrilling game to watch. And I was kind of double screening this alongside Slovakia, Romania, which was it was not a high quality double screening. And I found that the double screenings are more difficult when there's a steep interest gradient, when I have a very high degree interest in one game and a very low in the other game. And I just, because I was curious to see if the Belgians would figure it out, and I really wanted Ukraine to do something. So there were two teams I was kind of interested in on the one hand. And I don't want to diss the Romanians. The Romanians have clearly been better than I was expecting them to be. And Slovakia have got some tidy midfielders and all this stuff we've talked about. But Slovakia-Romania was not floating my boat. So I was mostly watching Belgium-Ukraine. And again, I must say, a frustrating game where not a lot of things happened in the first half. And it was funny hearing Martin Keown on COCOMs on the television here in England, because he was complaining because the Belgium manager was signaling that he wanted the team to play in a more measured, like, slow the pace down a bit. And Keown was like, well, I'd be looking for more tempo. They need to play faster. Which, again, is always the thing with, like, the English football people and their approach to international football. It's like, they watch it and they go, well, this isn't as fast as the Premier League. The solution must be to play faster. You know what? Actually playing faster at international level in these summer tournaments, when you don't know your teammates that well and you're up against a well-organized team and there's not a lot of space to play into, you know, it's pretty difficult. You can't just push the button and go, oh, let's play much faster. There's got to be some space to run into. It's got to, and as I even start talking about this, I feel we're very dangerously close to the radioactive England territory. There was almost an England take in there. So let's just get the heck out of that again and back to this game. Ukraine very nearly got a goal, actually, in the first half. With Dovbyk, who's not been good in this tournament, and he scored a lot of goals in La Liga, but he has not looked impressive at all, and he was in a position where he really needed to pass it to Yaremchuk, but he did not, to the point where you just wonder, like, did Yaremchuk, like, put ants in his bed or something? Like, I don't understand. Like, it was really weird decision-making. And Ukraine's, I thought they weren't super ambitious. They were clearly very mindful of the fact that conceding would make this game tricky for them. But they grew into the game. They started moving the ball around okay. And I kept thinking, where were these guys against Romania in the first game? I'm still bitter about this, because that they were sloppy, and then when they conceded a goal, they completely fell apart. Whereas here, I just thought this was a much more measured and intelligent performance. And if they'd approached the Romania game in anything like this manner, I think this group would have gone differently for the Ukrainians. And aside from that, there wasn't a ton to get excited about. And you go into halftime, Belgium having had the most possession, but Ukraine, yeah, kind of growing into the game, actually creating the better chances. And that was the pattern of the second half as well, I thought. I see from my notes, I've written Ukraine really holding up well here. Also from my notes, Belgium take off Tielemans and Trossard, but put on Mangala and Carrasco? What the hell? And really, it's baffling to me. I have some big questions for the Belgian coach, Domenico Tedesco, particularly about the non-use of Loic Openda. A huge season in Germany, 24 goals for RB Leipzig, made a real impact when he came on for the last sort of 10-15 minutes against Slovakia. Lively player, was just nowhere to be seen here, as Belgium continued to, like, not look very good. Kevin De Bruyne was trying to do things, Jeremy Doku was dribbling people, this sort of stuff was happening, but the team really wasn't clicking, and they needed some kind of spark, and you turn to, like, Mangala and Carrasco, like, what's happening here? I find it weird that Charles de Ketelaere is in the squad at all if they're not going to use him, because he's shown for Atalanta this season that he's got some touch and some vision and he can do some things. Doesn't seem to be getting any minutes. So I don't quite understand what Belgium are trying to do. But that, I guess, is the curse of having quite a lot of, like, technically good attacking players. You know, people are always, whoever you pick, people are going to say, oh, you should have picked the other guy. But I still think, looking at Openda, the season he's had, and just how lively he looked when he came on against Slovakia, not using him when you really could quite use a goal here, I just think it's strange behavior from Tedesco, the Belgian coach. I really don't understand it. And a goal would have made a big difference, right? Because as this result petered out, Romania ends up winning the group, implausibly, because they scored those three goals against Ukraine, which gave them the good goal difference. And when everyone ends up on the same number of points, then that's how that goes. And because they couldn't get a goal here, because they couldn't put this game to bed, Belgium, against the Ukraine team that, you know, like I said, hadn't been good in the first two games, they end up on the bad side of the draw. They get France in the next round, whereas they could have gotten the much more shaky Dutch. Not that France have been great, but you know what I'm saying? As disappointing as Belgium have been, I think if they'd have been in the other side of the draw, suddenly, you know, because that side of the draw is pretty weak, suddenly the route to the final for them is there. So, yeah, they end up on the bad side of the draw instead because they couldn't get it done in this game. And towards the end, again, Ukraine gradually growing into it. And Malinovsky and Sudakov both had decent shooting chances. And it kind of felt to me like it was building towards this great finish and maybe Ukraine could really do something here, but they just couldn't get the ball into the goal. And it's not like they had a huge amount of pressure. They had a couple of nice little moves, but maybe the final push there came a little bit too late. Maybe they could have gone on the attack sooner. Who knows? They could have been hit on the counter and lost. I don't know, but I felt Ukraine really deserved to win this game. Super disappointed in Belgium. Other people were much harsher than me on Belgium for the two first games. I thought they were kind of fine against Slovakia, but inefficient, and they got the job done against Romania. Here, I thought they were really bad. Super disappointed with Belgium here, and now they get France in the next round, which I can't imagine that they'll win. As much as there are now question marks over France, they would have to raise their game by quite a lot, because Belgium, again, they have this sort of dual problem of being wasteful in front of goal and not super convincing in front of their own goal. And I think against Kylian Mbappe and the lads, even if they're not a slick footballing machine at the moment, that's just going to be really tricky for them. And Slovakia, Romania, yeah, that was in the bracket of games that I technically saw because it was on a screen in front of my face, but I did not pay a lot of attention to it because it looked like a messy game where Romania were doing the thing that Romania have done so far, is that they're showing a lot of spirit and a lot of fight. But they're clearly not a super good team. I think their pass completion rate for the game was 70%. So more than one out of every four passes went astray. Almost one out of every three. Not great. Whereas Slovakia are slightly better structured, but kind of lack individual players who can do good things going forward. And it just didn't seem like a particularly thrilling watch, and it ended 1-1. Not a fun group, Group E, I have to say. What was fun, on the other hand, was everything that was to come, the late games. And here, as the game moved on, both games were at one point pretty fascinating. So my dual watching muscles were fully flexed here. But I have to say, most of my attention was on Georgia-Portugal, because you know I have very strong feelings for the Georgians. When they went up early, when Kvaratskhelia scores that goal, yeah, of course, it's a really bad giveaway by Antonio Silva, but it's a really well-executed counter from Georgia once they get it. And Kvaradona himself delivers with the finish. I think it's like one of the happiest moments I've had in the tournament so far. My happiness spiked in a big way. But I also thought, they've scored too soon here. You know, they're going to have to defend for an awful long time. But they defended really well. And they looked a threat when they broke on the counter. And that was the thing that surprised me about this game, I have to say, because we've talked about it before. Georgia are such a strange underdog. They have really skillful players. But sometimes I've had to question how well organized they are, whether they can fully stay focused for 90 minutes. They're slightly chaotic people, the Georgians. But really, I thought they were really good here. And they really frustrated Portugal, who didn't create a lot of huge chances. They had more possession, as you'd expect, but they didn't create any huge chances. The Ronaldo thing, I am absolutely baffled that he played this game. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Roberto Martinez rotated a lot, and he rotated his most important players. I mean, he rotated most of the players, but certainly, like, Bernardo Silva was benched. Bruno Fernandes, annoyingly for us, was benched. But Cristiano Ronaldo apparently insists on playing the game, which is incredible to me. The guy's 39. If anyone needs the rest, it's him. If they win the game, if they lose the game, it doesn't matter to their situation in the group. He could have used a couple of extra days of rest ahead of their next game. But we all know why he didn't get that. We all know what kind of a character Cristiano Ronaldo are. We all know that he looked at Georgia and thought, oh, well, here's a team that lost 7-1 to Spain in the qualifying. Time for me to improve my stats. There are records to be broken, you guys. So instead of doing the thing that would have served his team, which is to get a couple of extra days rest so that he can be at his best when Portugal go into the knockouts, he played. And he played, he got booked for dissent, and he kept dissenting. And with a slightly grumpier and less patient referee, he could have very possibly gotten himself sent off. He could have gotten a second yellow card for whinging and then gotten himself banned for the next game. So just really weird behavior by a guy who at 39 should be more experienced than this. I mean, this whole sort of putting yourself ahead of absolutely everything. That's like a phase you're supposed to grow out of, right? Like, he continues to behave like a sulky teenager, this guy. And again, he's nearly 40. Not a fan of it at all. And with my antipathy towards this guy being as strong as it is, and my pro-Georgia bias being what it is, you can imagine that I enjoyed myself very much as this game went on. Georgia had a big chance on a set piece. Portugal kept huffing and puffing. They had a few shooting opportunities. They did have to put in a very, very good block from Cristiano Ronaldo at one point. Well, Felix had some nice touches, as he always does. But, you know, and I kind of sat there and I kept waiting. All right, in the second half, Roberto Martinez is going to put on Bernardo Silva. He's going to put on Bruno Fernandes. Portugal are going to up the tempo. They're going to start moving the ball quicker, and they're going to eventually unlock the Georgians. That's what's going to happen, isn't it? So in the 49th minute, when Kvaratskhelia missed a pretty big chance, I was like, oh no, that was it, man. You could have made it 2-0. But instead, you know, Portugal are going to bring on the cavalry, and it's all going to go wrong. It's not what happened. Instead, they get a penalty with Mikel Tadsa. Now the tournament top scorer, Mikel Tadsa, scores. And Georgia keep holding on, and Roberto Martinez makes his changes, but he does not bring on Bruno Fernandes. He does not bring on Bernardo Silva, the two guys who I think more than anyone could have like juiced up this game. And for as much as we've talked about Portugal having a lot of strength and depth, and as much as this is still an impressive team on paper with all the changes, they weren't that good. Now, I'm sure this isn't the formation they would ideally like to play, but kind of underwhelmed by Portugal in this game, but super, super impressed by Georgia and the way they hung together and the way they didn't run out of energy, like they were still running. Other games, we've seen them kind of fade a little bit in the second half, but they didn't at all. At one point, the English commentator late in the game said that they were like, it was like playing against a group of 11 excitable puppies because they were just constantly zooming around. Which again, super impressed. And listen, we talk about Kvaratskhelia a lot because he's brilliant, and Mikel Tadsa is a very good player who's going to have a tremendous career, and Mamardashvili is genuinely one of the best shot stoppers in the world. So there's good stuff in this Georgian team, but there's also some random dudes here who play for like obscure leagues around Europe. I believe the starting lineup had players from like 10 different European leagues. It is a kind of a ragtag bunch of journeymen, mostly just with a couple of players who are a little bit special. And in the second half, they even brought on a guy who plays for Dinamo Batumi in the Georgian League, which by the UEFA coefficient is ranked as the 46th best league in Europe, ahead of the Estonian and Albanian leagues, but below the league in Malta. The Maltese League is ranked as being a stronger European league than the league of Georgia. So having a player from that league playing here and holding his own, there wasn't a big problem with him. His name is Gheorghe Tsitaitsvili. He came on when Lokoshvili got injured and he was kind of fine, like there wasn't a problem there. Really just tremendous stuff from Georgia holding on. And as the game wore on, I mean, obviously Portugal knew that the defeat didn't change anything. So there would have probably been a slightly different urgency from them if the game was important. But that's not going to matter to Georgia at all. We're already seeing now on the internet just incredible images from Tbilisi coming in. Of people obviously driving around and honking their horns, of the fireworks going off. I mean, do yourself a favor and just kind of look this up on your social media site of choice. Images from Tbilisi tonight or last night, I suppose. There's even people who have shot footage from like their balconies when their second goal, when the penalty went in, and you can actually hear like people cheering all over town. And having this sort of moment, it really reminded me of... it reminds me a little bit of Norway, of our sort of greatest moments in international football when we beat Brazil in 1998. I mean, that was a game that didn't matter to the Brazilians, but we didn't care about that. Like, it's still an incredible achievement for us to have that moment. And Norway were at the time a team that were kind of used to taking big scalps and were high in the FIFA rankings and stuff. Georgia are not that. The Georgians all completely lost their minds when they qualified. Like, they beat Luxembourg and Greece in the playoffs and Tbilisi went wild. I mean, what's happening tonight? I mean, honestly, what they should do tomorrow, like the hangovers in that city and that country tomorrow is going to be something else, because they do like a drink, the Georgians, I've discovered in my time there. So I think they should send like scientists from all over the world to Tbilisi tomorrow to just kind of study the hangovers that will have been incurred should be studied for science. But what a party they are having, I am sure. So that just, obviously that had a lot of my attention this evening as the game was going on. But I was also keeping an eye on Czechia versus Turkey, and that game became sort of low-key kind of interesting as it went on. There wasn't a lot that happened in the first half, except for the fact that Czechia picked up a red card. And this, I tend to, again, want to stay away from excessive ref chat, but this red card kind of annoyed me. I'm sure you can find refereeing experts who will explain to you that he'd ended up kind of accidentally stamping on the guy's foot, and that's something the referees have been told to be very hard on, and it kind of makes sense, because those tackles, whether they're accidental or not, you can break people's metatarsals, you know, it's kind of dangerous. But if you look at the movement and the full action, like, he's reaching for the ball and doesn't quite get there, and someone actually, like, kind of puts his foot under. He isn't trying to do anything. I know intent shouldn't matter, but this is such a, for me, that is a pretty soft yellow card. And there's nothing about this in the rules of the game, but I do think if you're going to send someone off for a second yellow in the first half of a crucial knockout game in the Euros, I feel like that needs to be a quite yellow card. It should be... I really don't think it was necessary for the ref to give that. But, you know, I'm sure the referees will tell me I'm wrong, and I'm usually the one who wants to defend the referees, and maybe I should just stop talking. But that felt really harsh on the Czechs, I have to say. But the Czechs didn't give up. They kept fighting. They actually had a pretty decent chance in the first half. And when the Turks took the lead, it's sort of the 50th minute there, about, brilliant strike by Çalhanoğlu. It's such a sweet hit, and he does strike the ball beautifully. I also really fell for the Czechs there as well, because their goalkeeper had just made a great save, appeared to injure himself in the shoulder when he came down. And yeah, it wasn't a head injury, so the referee is, you know, he's under no obligation to stop the game. But the goalkeeper seemed pretty clearly impeded when the strike from Çalhanoğlu came in, and the goalkeeper came off with the injury just afterwards, so he wasn't faking anything. So the situation for the Czechs then is they're 1-0 down, having had a super soft red card and conceded the goal with the goalkeeper actually having just injured himself. Like, the gods of football, not on the side of Czechia this evening, you have to say. But again, they fought back. They stayed in the game, and they got the 1-1, which was clearly the kind of goal that this Czech team can score. It's a long throw, and the ball just kind of bounces around in the box a bit. It was almost a foul on the goalkeeper. It was almost a handball, but it just about wasn't any of those things, and the goal didn't get disallowed. And the 10 men of Czechia were actually kind of pushing for a winner towards the end of this game when they got hit on the counter by Turkey, the lesser-spotted Cenk Tosun delivering the goods for the Turks. And listen, I am happy we got the Turks through. The Turks have been a source of fun, and we now get the sort of unbelievably interesting game between them and the Austrians in the round of 16s. Love that. And having them in that game rather than the Czechs, yes, I am happy with that outcome. But I must say, as much as I don't love their style of play, I kind of grew to admire and appreciate the effort the Czechs put into this game. Under very, very difficult circumstances, they kept fighting, they were really aggressive, they were structured, they were a threat when they were able to get forward, and I just thought they did really well and deserve credit for that. The pretty crazy game in terms of bookings, 18 yellows and one straight red in the game, with a fair few of those being given out to people on the benches, which I guess is what happens when you get a pretty physical Czech team against the Turks, of course, who are always lively. But that, again, that was a really fun evening of watching two games at the same time, of lively and exciting European action, which was good. There was the whole awful England thing yesterday, and Serbia-Denmark seemed pretty bad, and then the early games today weren't that exciting, so we kind of needed that to sort of get to remind ourselves that this has been, broadly speaking, a pretty fun tournament. Let's have a quick look at the round of 16 games. We're not going to, like, have a super in-depth analysis, but it is, as we spoke about yesterday, the bracket is so crazily lopsided. And I went through all the teams yesterday, but you know what? I'm going to do it again. On one hand of the bracket, these are all on the same side, so one of these teams has to be in the final at the end of it. We have Romania, we have the Dutch, we have Austria, we have the Turks, we have England, we have Slovakia, we've got Switzerland and Italy. One of these guys will be in the final of this tournament, which is wild to me, because based on performances so far, yeah, you would only say Austria. Austria have been one of the most engaging teams to watch. I'm still wary. I feel like I don't fully trust it yet. I'm still keen to see what happens when they come up against a strong opponent. I still don't know if it's viable to play with that kind of aggressive press for too many games in a tournament. But hey, guess what? They might not come up against a very strong opponent. They've got the Turks first, and you'd think against a pretty wild and disorganized Turkey, they would pick them apart. I mean, that should be a really fun game to watch. And then they've got the winner of the Dutch versus Romania afterwards. They've already beaten the Dutch pretty soundly. If it's Romania, I mean, I keep underestimating Romania, so maybe I should stop doing that. Maybe they have a fair chance against the Dutch. But whoever comes out of that, you think Austria, based on performances so far, could win. So then suddenly there's a real possibility of Austria in the semis, which is exciting. And I feel like this is good for me because I had two dark horses that I picked ahead of the tournament. One of them crashed and burned. So I would like to see at least the other one do even better than expected to restore some of my very fragile and precious credibility to the extent that I have any of that. England versus Slovakia and Italy versus the Swiss. Now, those could very easily be terrible games of football. And I've said it before, I think Italy versus the Swiss has got Italy on penalty written all over it. But, you know, the Swiss have looked like a better team so far, so maybe they could do something there. And we're not going to talk more about England now, because, oh my God, there's been so much and there will be even more, so no England in this episode. When the dust settles on this crazed Georgian celebration, which, and I wish them all the best, they deserve this night, this is one of those moments all the Georgians will remember. I've seen somewhere that apparently the television ratings for the Georgia game has been 90%, which is like, for anything to happen in a country and have 90% of people watching the same thing on television is remarkable. And it's such a feel-good thing. I love it. Bad thing is they get Spain now, who actually have looked like the best team in the tournament, as far as I'm concerned. And the Georgians, of course, played against Spain twice in the qualifiers. The first one, they lost 7-1 at home, and then they lost 3-1 away. So that is slightly ominous. As much as I love the Georgians, I don't think that's going to work out well for them. Germany faced Denmark, and they should be able to do that. But the little caveat here is that the Danes were very solid against England, very well organized and structured and all of those things. Definitely lack a bit of cutting edge up front. But with Germany having shown some vulnerabilities defensively in their games against Switzerland and Hungary, perhaps this isn't a total slam dunk, but I'd be pretty surprised, to put it mildly, if they didn't go through here. Portugal have got Slovenia. You would imagine they would take care of business there. And the French have got Belgium. Now, this is a fascinating encounter, I think. Might be terrible to watch because none of these teams have done well so far. And that's kind of the key. Based on France's performances in the group stage, you'd think, huh, they might be a bit vulnerable. My big tournament favorite ahead of the tournament are not playing that well. And if this Belgium team were firing on all cylinders, you know, that could be a thing. But of course, as we have discussed at some length, Belgium very much not firing all cylinders. No, but not even firing on some of the cylinders today. There was like the odd cylinder here and there that fired on their own, but the team is not working very well. So you would expect France to get through that. That's kind of just my instant reaction and feeling about those games. I'm sure I'll be wrong about loads of things. If there's anything we've learned from this tournament so far, is that I am often wrong about many things. But that is kind of the fun of tournaments, isn't it? I'm now going to have one, possibly 2 days off. We'll see how that works. Very confused. Tomorrow's the first night since the beginning of the tournament when there is no football. It's a confusing feeling, but I also sense right now that my brain could use it. You can tell, but this has been the most heavily edited episode of The Last Resort so far. I can tell you this now, having not started the editing process yet, but a lot of work has gone into stitching this together into something coherent, because my brain is kind of fried. So the resort master has to take a few days off. If there was time, I would find a resort on my own to go to, but there is no time for that. But two days off, that'll do me well. And then we will be back in the swing of it when we get to the weekend with these very exciting looking knockout games. I am looking forward to that, and I will talk to you all then.